Hello, everybody. Okay, I'm going to do a few mitzvahs together tonight because there's very little in terms of practical halachic activity based on the next few mitzvahs. And I suspect that this will be the case even after the arrival of Mashiach and a return to Yovel and a fully Torah observance that will come with a rebuilt Beis Hamikdash. I'm referring to the mitzvah of Eved Ivri. We finished Parshas Yisro last week. It just happens to be that this week's Parsha is Parshas Mishpatim. So the first mitzvahs of Parshas Mishpatim relate to the laws of the Hebrew slave, or I should say the Hebrew bondsman, and the Hebrew bondswoman. Okay, those are two very different institutions. A man can become a bondsman in one of two ways, all right? And a woman can become a bondswoman only in one way. Okay, a man can become never the property of someone else, but in the service of someone else, either by stealing and being unable to pay back what was stolen, right? Not the ketho, not the double, or the four and the five for a sheep and an ox, but he can't pay back what he stole. Right, he stole something worth $10,000. He can't come up with the money, and he is to be sold to the person from whom he stole that thing. Incidentally, the person who was the victim of what was stolen can refuse. He can say, "I don't want him living in my house. He's a ganav. He's a thief. I don't want him living with me. I don't trust him. He's going to come into my house and steal my silver." Right. What he can do is to say, he still owes me that thing. He stole it from me and I want it back. Right? He obviously sold it if he doesn't have it. Right? I want it back and he's going to have to pay me over time and they'll work that out. Right? And this is how we do away with the point of Eved Ivri. Right? Although in the English translation of some of the comments and some of the books, I'm just going to look, I have the modern JPS English translation in front of me. And in Exodus 21, it says, a Hebrew slave, yeah, Eved Ivri. I guess a bondsman. Well, the way the Gemara in Maseches Kiddushin creates the rules, the Torah Shebaal Peh of the Eved Ivri, the way that it's created by Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral tradition, I can't call this person a slave. Kone Eved La'atzmo, kone Adon La'atzmo. You know, if this man is married, now all of a sudden all the tuitions of the children, all the housing for the family members is all upon the master. So, you know, and the Gemara gives all kinds of rules. You know, if you have only one pillow, the Eved gets it, not you. He has to be clothed by you, fed by you, given this. I mean, a brach, who wants this? Right? Okay, but as it may, mitzvah number 42 is the mitzvah of the din of Eved Ivri. Mitzvah number 43 is the mitzvah of the Hebrew bondswoman. Now, the Hebrew bondsman can become an Eved Ivri by not affording to pay back what he stole. That's our guy in Parshas Mishpatim. It happens to also be, the Gemara insists, our guy in Sefer Devarim. Okay. Now, did everybody here get what I sent out today? You get online what I sent out? You're all looking at a computer? Because in Parshas Re'eh, right, the dinim of Eved Ivri are repeated. Okay? With two very important differences. Something in Devarim is added, and something in Devarim is subtracted. What's added in Devarim is that when this guy goes free, you are to gift him. He has to be gifted. Don't just give him $40 and put him on a bus someplace. He's going to steal again. You have to give him significant gifts. Don't the Shochanere come. You didn't leave Egypt without gifts, right? The same Lashon is used, right? We left Egypt laden with gifts. So when you send an Eved Ivri away, Ha'anek ta'aniko so. Give him gifts all around his neck. Give him jewelry. Give him all kinds of clothing. Give him everything he needs. Okay? Parshas Re'eh in Sefer Devarim omits one aspect of our law, which is that in Sefer Shmos, in our Parsha, it says that if the master wants, he can give this man a Canaanite woman, right, a shifcha, in order to have children. So much so that at the end of the 6 years, he may say, I love the woman he gave me. I want to stay on. I don't want to leave her. She's staying behind.
She's not his wife, though. Why did he say that?
It says, es ishti. I must tell you that Chazal say there's a third parsha on this. There's going to be a fourth one in Parshas Bahar in a minute. In Parshas Kedoshim, it says that if a Jewish man sleeps with a isha necherefes leish, right? She's a shifcha. She's a bondswoman. That is necherefes leish. What does the Torah say should happen to these two people? Bikores tihyeh. There should be some kind of punishment. This is known as an asham shivcha charufa, right? Just to bring a korban for this, right? So why isn't the punishment death? He's sleeping with a married woman. The answer is she's the woman set aside for an Eved Ivri. That's what that's talking about. Necherefes leish. So here, in Devarim, the Torah calls this woman a married woman, a hafdias ishti. Right? We're not talking about the wife he came into the house with. That woman would never remain behind. You know what I'm saying? Why the Torah gives it? He doesn't have to give the reason, but the Torah gives in Sefer here also in Shmos, it says, and when the 6 years are up, he can go free. But if after 6 years he says, the Torah could just say, I want to stay on. I want to have. I like the accommodations here. Right? Instead, the Torah tells us why he wants to stay on. He goes, Ahavtis ishti v'sadoni. Right? Let me tell you, the way slaves are treated in ancient Near East, no one would want to stay on if they were given their freedom. And no ancient civilization actually gave freedom to a slave. Right? So what's happening here is that when he says, I don't want to go free, because ahavti es ishti, I love my wife, he's talking not about the wife he was married to when he was sold into this situation. It's talking about the wife that was given to him after he came. Okay?
But the shifcha, right?
Right, the shifcha.
So, but there's no kedusha.
Yeah, she's called necherefes leish. Right? You're right. If it was Kedushin, then the man who sleeps with her in Parshas Kedoshim would be killed as an adulterer.
Right. I mean, isn't it kind of strange that Mishpatim, like, they just come out of Egypt, and the very first subject is...
That's it. That's what the Gemara says, is that the former slaves might make bad masters. So
yeah, no, that's what I was thinking, that it's to control that impulse, because you may just turn around and exploit people in that same situation.
Correct. Now, what we want to make sure is that we understand this through the lens of Torah Shebaal Peh, because a lot of this is determined by Torah Shebaal Peh, by oral tradition. And so our guy in in there could be a natia to say that the two slaves are different people, right? Because in Devarim, he's given gifts, and Devarim does not mention at all about being given a shivcha, right? This is a non-Jewish woman. Jewish man is not allowed to sleep with a non-Jewish woman. Get this. The Gemara asks, what if a Kohen stole and can't pay back and is sold into this servitude? Can the master give him a shivcha to father children? What do you think? And prove it. Is a Kohen given a woman? Because a Kohen isn't allowed to marry this woman even if she does convert. So the answer Gemara gives is yes. Yes. Every Jewish man is not allowed to sleep with this woman. And yet the Torah says, listen, part of your, I call it a punishment. I don't know. The guy might like it. I don't know.
Is he required to sleep with her?
It's interesting that, yes, if the master says, this is what I want to do, then he's got to, it's, you know, you have to listen. In other words, it's not a case where the man says, no, you can't tell me to eat unkosher food. I'm sorry. I'll serve you and I'll plow your field, but I'm not going to, eat unkosher food.
Right.
But this one thing, which is normally forbidden to every Jewish man, is now something that the master can give him to do. This is part of your punishment, or whatever, however you want to look at it. So it's therefore, since it's a chiddush to allow this for any Jewish man, the Gemara insists that if he's a Kohen, he cannot refrain. Furthermore, if this Kohen who stole and couldn't pay back and therefore was sold into some kind of servitude wants to stay on because he loves his wife, right? Should he get his ear pierced?
He can't.
He can't, because what would that do to him, Howard?
He'd be puzzled to the avoda.
Be puzzled to the avoda. It'll make him a balmum. Everyone with me on that? It will invalidate him from serving the 2 weeks a year that he has to serve in the temple. He'll make himself a mum. And yet the Gemara says, if that's what you want to do, the whole thing is a chiddush.
Really? Because that's voluntary at that point. That's not.
Yeah, even still. One of the mitzvahs in the story. Okay. All right, so the schinuch, mitzvah number 42, counts all the mitzvahs din eved ivri. Okay, including all the mitzvahs that pertain to him. Now, here's something fascinating. I just want to tell you a programmatic point about the Minchas Chinuch. Is that, you see, if you do have, I sent to you, everybody, the Sefer HaChinuch. Can an Eved Ivri Kohen serve in the Beis HaMikdash? Yeah, if he's during his time. Every Kohen is part of a family that works 2 years, 2 weeks a year, right? So can the master say, no, I'm not giving him up. He's working for me, right? So the answer is that although this is not covered in the Gemara, some Rishonim asked this question, and they say that he has to be able to get a furlough to work in the Mikdash.
Does that extend his service?
Yeah, for just that, just 2 weeks. But I would say that this, there's an interesting tangent to this, is the Bechor Shor. Listen to this pasuk. Ready? It's in the beginning of the parsha. It says, "Ki tikne eved ivri, sheish shanim ya'avod, uvashano hashvi'is." Yetzei lachavshi chinam. He shall work for 6 years. And in the shvi'is, listen to the word, uvishvi'is, he goes free. So this Bechor Shor, who died in the year 1210, Bechor Shor says something that Menachem Kasher found some sources that seem to say the same that are before him, but things that everybody else that read, where they read this, they said, where on earth did you get this? That he says that the Shvi'is doesn't mean in his seventh year he goes free.
And Shemitah?
Yeah. The Masechet in Shas about the laws of Shemitah is called Maseches Shvi'is.
Right.
Heard of Shemitah called Shvi'is?
Yeah.
Rambam says the laws of Shvi'is. Well, he says the laws of Shemitah, actually. So the B'chor Shor says in the Shemitah year he goes free. And everybody shreis chai v'kayam. They say, what are you talking about? The Gemara in Kiddushin, the Gemara in Maseches Shvi'is? No Gemara says this. No Chazal, it's a Zohar. Okay, Menachem Kasher points out in the Torah Shlema. But where does it say that a Hebrew slave goes free in the Shemitah year? Shvi'is means his seventh year. If he works 6 years, in his seventh year, he's going to go free.
Yeah, but it doesn't say, it says Shvi'is, it doesn't say Shana
Shviis. It says Sheshanim.
Right, but then it says
Uva Shviis.
Right, but so that's some support for what he's saying.
Yeah,
because it doesn't say, you know, Ushnat Hashviis.
Right. It's pshat. So what I'd like to suggest to you here is that well before the Zohar, I think we have a source for where B'chor Shor gets this. It's this week's Haftorah. This week's Haftorah starts off with an incredibly difficult issue. Yirmiyahu starts the Haftorah by saying, why aren't you setting the slaves free? It says in the Torah that after 7 years, you have to set the slaves free, and you're not doing so. Are you listening carefully? Yirmiyahu says in the Haftorah to set the slaves free after 7 years. Mazeh. Torah says to set a slave free after 6 years. It says, Miketz Sheva Shonim. So Rashi writes in Sefer Yirmiyahu, it's in chapter 34. Rashi writes, Miketz can mean at the end, but it can also mean at the beginning. In some cases, it obviously means at the end, like in Parshas Miketz. You can't say at the beginning of 2 years, Paro had a dream. At the end of 2 years, from the previous story, Paro had a dream. Like Miketz Shnatayim Yamim. But in some places, Miketz can be like Kotzeh, Mina Kotzeh, from the edge. So Miketz can mean the beginning edge, not the end edge, right? Okay, Miketz Sheva Shonim means that you go to the beginning of the seventh year, all the slaves go free.
All right. Yeah, but that actually would support B'chor Shor because it wouldn't be uniform for everybody.
It's based on when you. You know, when each particular evidivri was sold, they'd make a cheshbon, and then 6 years, after 6 years of completion. But here is what I think you can give as a pshat in order to resolve Yirmiyahu's problem, because later in the Haftorah, Yirmiyahu himself says that the Hebrew bondsman works for 6 years. He contradicts himself. He says first Miketz Sheva Shonim, and now he says Miketz Sheish Shonim.
All right.
So here is the I think the solution based on the B'chor Shor. At the time of the Torah, certainly at the time of the Gemara, what was the main occupation of an Eved Ivri? What would he be doing?
Agricultural work.
Agricultural work. There's nothing in the house to do. Right? And there are people lived in tiny, tiny domiciles. Nothing in the house to do. When you go to the marketplace, everything is agricultural, right? In a Shemitah year where there's no agriculture, so this is what B'chor Shor seems to say that fits very well with Yirmiyahu and his contradiction. He gets a year off every Shemitah year. For some slaves, that's going to be the beginning of his six-year term. In some it's going to be the end of the six-year term. You get it? You're working all together 7 years. With 1 year off, like Shabbos. You steal on Tuesday, you're going to be a slave from Wednesday till Wednesday, 6 days altogether, but for a total of 7 days, because one of those days you're off. So Yirmiyahu was right. Set him free after 7 years, because it's actually a seven-year sentence with 1 year off in the middle. The actual work, like Yirmiyahu says later, 6 years altogether. So when it says, Uvashvi'is yetzei chavshi, it means in the Shemitah year, he goes free to finish off his sentence after the next Rosh Hashanah. Sounds interesting, right?
Yeah, I mean, what is it? He'd just be hanging around. It'd be actually a loss to the owner.
Yeah. Yeah, so this Bechor Shor is interesting. Why didn't the Gemara express this? Why didn't we get it clearly? Okay, I'm just putting it out there.
No, but that's a really interesting point.
Mm-hmm. Camelia, did you get the sources that Chad sent out?
Yeah, 1 second. I'm going to post them in the bottom.
Okay, so thank you. So I put on this first page the Sefer HaChinuch, upon which our Minchas Chinuch is based. The Sefer HaChinuch was a Rishon. Some say it was a Rav Aharon in Barcelona. That's a student of Ramban. So what's fascinating is that, I mean, what do we have to do with that? Minchas Chinuch was written in the late 19th century. There were no more slaves. You know, we haven't had no more Hebrew slaves since the first temple was destroyed. I mean, there's no Yovel, there's no Eved Ivri, and yet the Minchas Chinuch is 26 pages. 26 pages long about the laws of Eved Ivri and Amma Ivriya. Right? You can have 1 or 2 pages about eating matzah on Pesach. 26 pages. And that's the nature of the work. It's all kinds of hypothetical, lumdish questions that maybe 80% of which have never actually happened. Right? But that's what that's the beauty of the Minchas Chinuch. Is that he raises questions that sometimes the Gemara doesn't raise, just for the fun of it. We're going to get into some of them shortly, but here are the five mitzvahs. Okay, 42, the din of Eved Ivri. 43, the din of the bondswoman. A bondswoman becomes a bondswoman only one way. Her father sells her. Not very nice. The Torah calls it Bevigdo Ba. He's treacherous to her. But he sells her. Okay? She goes free from her status as a bondswoman in one of three ways. The man who buys her marries her. The son of the man who buys her marries her. Or she goes free. She can never work more than 6 years. And one of those things has to happen when she turns 12. Okay? The father may not sell her after she's 12. Okay? The point the Gemara makes is that the main purpose of this sale is to actually marry her. Is that that usually the son of the man who purchases her marries her. But that's the only way a woman can become a slave. If she steals and can't pay back, there's no punishment like the man. Okay? So our story in Parshas Mishpatim, our mitzvah in Parshas Mishpatim, is that first way a man can become a slave, which is he steals and can't pay back. What's the second way? And a woman may not sell herself this way, but a man may, according to the Torah, which is he's broke, he can't pay his rent, and he wants to earn money, so it's called mocher et atzmo mishum dochako. He sells himself because of his impoverished state. Camille, you had a question?
Yeah. Are we perhaps learning the laws of slavery? Because if somebody was a mamzer, there may be a way to redeem the mamzer if you make him a slave.
Brilliant. Yes, there is. The Chinuch says this later. And regarding the women, yes, there is a Gemara in Yevamos that speaks about purifying a mamzer. because a mamzer has no one to marry. There are debates about this because slavery is outlawed in the United States. So how can we sell someone to a slave even for a minute? The whole point is just to sell him for a minute and then to free him. So he becomes an Eved Meshuchrar. An Eved Meshuchrar, a freed slave. And then an Eved Meshuchrar is allowed to marry a Jewish woman, but a mamzer can't. It's complicated, but maybe that's what we need. Yeah, we should at least know it. Okay. But here is just an interesting point, is that the mocher adatzma mishum dochako, the person who sold himself into slavery because he can't pay, earn money and he needs a way to raise funds, he doesn't work for 6 years. He works as long as he arranges the arrangement.
But he's paid wages for that period.
He arranges his own situation, yes.
So is it really correct to say he's a slave? I mean, why isn't he just like...
Yeah, I don't like the word slave in English for the first guy either. An indentured servant? Bondsman? I don't know.
Well, no, he's just committing himself to work for, X number of years.
Someone's giving him a job to help pay back his debt. He is not to be given a bondswoman. He also doesn't get gifts when he leaves. He's not the same guy we're talking about until now. Right? But here's the rub. In the sources that Camellia sent out just now, that I think Chad sent out earlier, is I have on one side Re'e and one side Mishpatim. See? Right? We are tempted to suggest that these are talking about two different slaves. Because in one, the one in Dvarim gets gifts, the one in Shmos has to suffer the indignity, if you will, of being given a bondswoman against the Torah. So one might think, look at the headings. Ki tikne eved ivri. If you purchase an eved ivri, you see those two words? Now, eved ivri can mean the eved of an ivri, Rashi says. You purchased an eved kna'ani from a Hebrew. You get it? You purchased an Eved from an Ivri. Right? As opposed to the Parshat Dvarim, which begins, look, ki mocher lecha ochicha ha-Ivri. That guy is your brother. Right?
But why if you purchased him, would he be allowed to leave after? Why did you have to emancipate him? If he's an Eved Kna'ani.
So good point. The Karaites who read it this way say, in light of the Parsha in Bahar, you see it in the third Parsha on this page, it speaks about that all Hebrew slaves go free in the Yovel, even if it's just 2 years after he was stolen and couldn't pay back, but not the Canaanite slaves. But why is this guy in Mishpatim? Howard's obvious question is, How can that be? The Canaanite slave in Vayikra does not go free after 6 years. The Canaanite slave in Mishpatim does. So this is what the Karaites say. Rashi disagrees. The Torah Shebaal Peh disagrees. But the Karaites, who have no oral tradition, claim that a Canaanite slave purchased from a Hebrew is to be treated better. He already knows kashrus. He knows how to be a Shabbos guy. He knows Shabbos. You know, he's you don't have to train him. He knows Mechutz and Fleishiks. He knows. As opposed to the Canaanite slave in Vayikra, who is purchased from a Canaanite. So that's different. Poppycock, says the Gemara. The Gemara says that the Eved in Mishpatim and the Eved in Re'e are the same. They're both talking about someone who steals and can't pay back. Those are the same people. As opposed to the guy in Vayikra, he's the one who can't pay back a debt and he wants to raise funds, so he sells himself. Okay, so for what have we accomplished? We've discussed the different ways that a man or a woman can become a slave or become free. All right, mitzvah 43 is the mitzvah of Yi'ud Shel Amah.
I had a question about slavery. Is it true that when the slaves in America were freed, that there were Jewish slave owners who had slaves, and the and their slaves became Jewish?
There are certainly cases of Jews owning slaves in the South, right? So I have heard, most of them were secular, so they didn't care about this. But I have heard about a few who were observant, right? Who circumcised them, who had them circumcised, the men. All right. So, yeah, if any of them wanted to convert afterwards, they just had to go to the mikveh. And then they'd be fully Jewish.
Okay. But I thought they automatically become Jewish.
No, there has to be a tefillah. No, there has to be a tefillah. Okay. A Gentile in the service of a Jew, of a Hebrew, keeps all the mitzvahs of the Torah, except the time-bound positive ones, like women, right? But they're not considered fully Jewish. Okay, they need shichur and they need tefillah, the shem gerus.
According to Jacob Katz, in the Middle Ages, there were Jews who did own slaves, and they did actually follow the requirement of circumcision.
Yeah, the din of Eved Knani is not dependent on Yovel. The din of Eved Ivri is. Of course, this is a moot point. Slavery is prohibited in I think it's still practiced in some parts of the world today. I don't know why no one's coming out against it. But still, if it's forbidden, you know, it's a question of dina de machuz dina. Okay. So we have the din of Eved Ivri. I just want to run through the five mitzvahs of the Sefer Chinuch because I'm only going to mention these five. I do have some topics I'd like to go through. I'm not sure how much of what we'll get to do today, but we can, since we're doing five mitzvahs at once, we'll get to it. Mitzvah Yud Shel Amah Hivriyah is the mitzvah of the person who purchased this girl from her father. There's a mitzvah for this man to have her marry someone in his household, preferably his son. Okay. Give her a life. And then the Torah says she has to be treated like a regular woman, like a regular wife. Right? Now there's something called mitzvahs pidyon amah ha'ivriyah, that's mitzvah 44, which is that the family members, If the marriage is not a proposal that comes to her quickly, her family members, but be careful because the father does have the right, if this happens, what I'm about to tell you, to sell her again. Right? This is no chiddush. This is a rule for every Jew. At the end of Vayikra, the Torah talks about the mitzvah of the family members of this guy who sold himself into slavery to purchase him, right? So everyone's going to raise money and pay $500 for this guy to be redeemed, and then he's going to go sell himself again.
That's probably the last time they put up the money.
How many times are you going to keep putting up the money, right? There's no obligation to keep. There could be some cases like if someone keeps losing something and I keep returning it, it goes, how many times is this guy going to lose the same thing? He's got to start caring more about his objects than I do.
Remember their case, it was a number of years ago, well, not that long ago, maybe 10 years ago, where this man claimed that he had, it would reveal who the person was he sold his daughter to. But he claimed that he had done that.
Yes, this was a case of a man who was trying to get even with his estranged wife.
Right. So, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, that's all, said, the guy's in Russia, he's pasolei, and there's no evidence that other than his statement that...
This is exactly how the rabbis came down. The man was trying to say that he was Mekadesh, his daughter, through Amma Ivriya. This young girl, she's like 8, 9. to get even with the mother.
And he wouldn't disclose the, so she could get married. I mean, ever. Yeah,
because
he wouldn't disclose.
The brother of the person who gave her Kedushin or something. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So the next mitzvah is that there is a mitzvah for this girl to be able to get on with her life. Someone should marry her within the framework of this family. Right? And if not, there's a mitzvah pidyon amah ivriya. There's a mitzvah of the family members to redeem her. And then shaloyim kor ama ivriya hakone o samiyat ha'av. So this fourth mitzvah is that if none of these happen, she has to go free. You can't, once the father sold this girl to this man, the choices are freedom on one side and marry her, get your son to marry her, right? Or the family members redeem her. But one of those choices is not that the man who purchased her from her father gets to sell her to someone else. That would violate the Torah. You get it? Mitzvah 45. Shaloyim kor ama ivriyah kone osa miyad ha'av. Do not sell her to anybody else. She either goes free or she marries your son. Okay? And then the Torah says that if she does marry the son, this mitzvah 46, shaloli groa she'er ksus va'ona. Sherak susava onasa lo yigra. What does this mean? If the son does marry her, he has to treat her like a fully fledged wife. In fact, and this is going to be a segue for what we're going to be doing next week. In fact, the Gemara in Maseches Ksuvos actually derives from this mitzvah 46, the general obligations of a man to his wife. She'ira, ksusa, va'onasa. She'ira means different things according to different mafarshim, no doubt. But the ultimate pshat of she'ira means either give her family, in other words, she should bear children. Okay, but that's some say that's a part of onasa. Or she'ira means give her clothing and shelter. Ksusa means give her, food and shelter. Ksusa is clothing. Onasa is your time. Not just to be intimate with her, but that the man has to spend time with her. Ona means time. Right? She'ira, ksusa, onasa, lo yigra. Why does Torah tell this? Because the man is saying, listen, she was sold by her father. What do I have to be a good husband for? You know, she should be happy that she has a small roof over her shoulders, over her head. No, don't talk that way. She is a full-fledged wife. So what's the segue? So I just want to review the five mitzvahs, right? Din of Eved Ivri, Din of Ama Ivriya. Eved Ivri becomes a slave in two ways. He stole, can't pay back, or he sells himself into servitude because he's impoverished. An Ama Ivriya can become a slave only one way. Her father sells her before she's 12. Right? She becomes free either by turning 12 and nothing happens, or by the son marrying her, or by a relative redeeming her. Okay? If none of those things happen, She just goes free. She's not to be sold to someone else. And if she is taken in marriage by the son, Sheirah, mitzvah 46, Sheirah, susava onasa lo yigra. Do not diminish your obligations of food, shelter, clothing, and spending time with her. Right? Here's my segue. The Torah sometimes teaches us fundamental rules in the format of a kal v'chomer. Let me explain what I mean. Torah teaches us that a dead person must be buried in the ground. Where does the Torah say that?
When someone is hung.
Yes, correct. Parshas Kisetse. After the courts hang a person, it says take his body off the tree and bury him immediately. That's it. We know anecdotally some stories where Yaakov buries Rachel and Avram buried Sarah and Yosef buries Yaakov and they do and Yosef buried Yosef. But how do we know that that's an absolute mitzvah? Maybe it's only for very important people. The Gemara in Sanhedrin asks all these questions. Right? But the actual mitzvah of burying dead people stems from the mitzvah of burying the man killed by the courts. Wow. If the man killed by the courts has to be buried, how much more so everybody else? Right? Look who the Torah uses to teach the rules of proper behavior of a man to his wife. The Amma Ivriya. Okay. Another example is, from whence do we learn that we're not allowed to waste things? It's called Balkashris. Right? Your mother told you when you're little, eat your peas and carrots because it's baltashris if you don't eat them.
From waging war?
Right, from waging war, right. It's in the context of waging war. Now, you know, I have studied a little bit about warfare. I mean, it seems to me that one of the purposes of warfare is to destroy as much as possible. No, even in the framework of warfare, the Torah is warning us not to engage in wanton waste and destruction. Everything in God's green earth has a purpose. And do not cut down those trees, etc., etc. And that's in the context of war is such a thing taught. Right? Have you ever heard the Gemara in Ksuvos in the fifth parak teaches us how we know that a married woman should cover her hair? Where do we derive that from?
It's from Sota. It says she takes off her.
The Sota.
She exposes her hair.
Remove the clea in her hair, remove her turban, remove the covering, another hair cut full down. So, there, she's a married woman. She has her hair covered.
Yeah, but it's a big question whether that's derived.
Yes. The Gemara talks about Das Moshe, Das Yehudis. But what's interesting is that the Gemara derives this rule of chastity or something, if you will, from hair, from this woman who's now being accused of very unchaste behavior. Right? So Kal Vachomer, the other women, right? You get it? Okay, so I have, next week I'm going to start with some, I have a few other examples of this. Okay, so we'll continue with that. All right, Hever, this time goes very fast for me. I didn't really get into the Minchas Chinuch too much. We did tonight the Sefer HaChinuch.
Well, 28 pages is going to be kind of hard.
26 pages altogether. I only copied the first six or seven. But after that, I really want to go. I'll spend time with that and the Kal Vachomer is next time. And then we're going to go on to the next mitzvah after that. But it's just interesting because that's the nature of the Sefer HaChinuch. It's not meant to be a practical guide for halacha. It's just meant to be a pilpul on how to go about performing the mitzvahs. Okay.
The Amma sounds like it's cruel, but if you're a poor father and you want to secure the welfare of your daughter, it's actually a way to be able to do that. It's not like he's being sadistic or treating like chattel, or he's trying to secure her future.
Especially if she's close to 12, because at 12, that's where the decision has to be made. So it could,
let's say you're poor and you have a number of children. He's looking out for her welfare. It's not like
In today's world, we just don't, we don't.
No, it sounds right, but if you consider what being a single woman was an impossibility in that.
Yeah, what the alternative is. Yeah, in the end of time is that the women say, "Don't marry us for beauty. Don't marry us for." Is it Marius but they discuss this with women dancing on Tuba of.
Right. Yeah.
So it says, and the women say, because they start off by saying things that are, lofty. about the good, a good reason to want to get married. And then they say, but don't forget to give us a lot of, lots of jewelry. Okay. All right, guys, everybody have a great week.